You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Yo.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 29th of June to the 5th of July, 2020. By Jove, I got it right. I think that's a rarity. As we go from, I just scrolled down through these notes and I realized actually these notes are really old, but some of them will come in useful if I don't touch them for a few more seasons. Cause the very first thing is this week's show is Mr. Osamatsu.
Man, what is this 2016 on over again?
I mean, like the way this year is fucking dragging on, I wouldn't be surprised.
Time is just looping back on itself. Now we're going to go backwards and we're going to like slide towards.
I gotta do 2020 again in 4 years. Fuck this.
It's going to be like the reverse of the Big Bang. It's going to just like it fucking fall back in on itself.
Yeah. What I did forget to say though was the non-solitary exceptions of Super Shiro episode 35 and Super Shiro episode 36. Oh. Many thanks to Burry Burry fan subs for kicking back into life and
thanks, lads.
Doing a couple more episodes.
Hope you're all right. Sorely missed. You don't miss a thing till it's kind of completely gone out of your life. That kind of way.
Your efforts are appreciated. You don't need to push yourself too hard, though. Hope you're okay.
Now I've joined their Discord, though, I see lots of photos of many, many Super Shiro toys, and my brain goes, maybe I do need a giant cuddly Shiro.
Oh, well, it's just tough times. You need a friend to get you through this.
So, episode 35 is called Adventures in the Jungle, where we learn that everyone loves Tarzan, and then Brian's brain goes, is Tarzan a reference children understand nowadays?
I was kind of thinking that as well. It's like, listen, I like Edgar Rice Burroughs, but most people don't fucking know. Good excuse to do a lot of Tarzan impressions, though. So.
Yeah. Even the Disney film is a good way back now.
Yeah. That was like Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. That was years ago.
Anyway, the detection of the Bubba Bone is in the jungle in the 35th district.
I told you, that's where they have all the Shin Chan films set in that jungle. They don't go to a foreign country, it's just there.
Yes, the jungle called. They all, Dekapu and Shiro start sniffing the bananas. And it turns out that one of these bananas, its smell is gorgeous, elegant, wild! It's the Boba Bone! But before they can get hold of it, a pink chipmunk steals it.
So I got Star Chipmunk. Chipmunk.
It's even got its mouth on the side of its face. Like
a... Yeah, it could be like a reference. And he's been a little bastard as well.
It's got a sadistic glee. Yeah. That's it.
And then we get a Tarzan chase, which goes on so long, they gradually lose their energy.
It did the thing. I was like, okay, it's funny, but then it goes back to being, it stops being funny, but it goes back to being funny as they get tired of doing Tarzan impressions.
Why are we shouting like this?
Then they lose the squirrel, and then we get a version of the cartoon multiple door gag, but this time with knot holes in a tree. I won't tell you how long it took me with it paused trying to remember what the names of those holes are in a tree.
Dog holes. Put dogs into them.
Then the banana drops into a muddy river, and they're eager to get it until they see piranhas. Again, what is this town? And then it becomes a game of you go first. No, you go first.
No, after you, I insist.
And then I assume they're doing something specifically off like a game show where you're trying to like slap each other off a log.
Yes.
Because they do like the spin around thing. And I was like, I feel like I know what that is, but I can't place it.
Yeah. Oh, you're right now. I didn't notice it at the time, but now you mentioned it. No, that's going to bug me. I'm sure I've seen it in a game show as well.
I know. I'm not going to say gladiators, but
something like that.
Something
yeah.
along those
where
lines.
They had big padded things and pools.
It's something
into
like
them. Yeah.
When you already had like the ninja warrior, you gotta get through the obstacles. I'm pretty sure it's been like a ninja warrior, but also there are people there trying to mess you up. But it's not the Kishi's castle.
I mean, like, if it's not one show, it could be multiple ones, probably, no.
Dekapu falls off, and he is shaved by piranhas.
Good cartoon gag. He's a considerable amount of fluff, more than I would have thought.
Dogs are like that. When you sit down, they're very lanky and thin. And then we get the rear end shaved off, it's like, oh my god, you've skeletonized my dog. What happened?
Then Shiro uses a pair of chopsticks made out of branches to pick the banana, but then he also falls in, and then we leave him reporting his success, bald but hiding his modesty behind a giant leaf. And, oh, by the way, it wasn't the bone this time.
No. What? Bones don't grow in banana bushels.
Then, episode 36, The Daily Life of Can-Can. In which we get Can-Can's morning routine, her life of luxury, going to the jewellery store. Her owner appears to be Mrs. Slocum from Are You Being Served? but much richer. So, Can-Can gets whatever she wants, but then the owner would always jet off to a party somewhere around the world. It's
like Can-Can's doing it to keep its owner's attention.
Yeah, and then
the existence.
The existence loop, yes. Basically, it's the same events loop, so it's a little bit faster this time, and then the owner goes to New York after she went to Paris the first time.
They'll change the joke as to what expensive things she buys,
Up. Yeah.
What color her nails are this today, that kind of thing. They'll change all the bits.
But who's it all for? Yes. Who am I doing this for, man?
Tokyo, loop shorter. Beijing, loop shorter. Moscow, loop shorter. And the crow shows up.
Little bird told me about a thing called a bobo bone.
And essentially, she wants to get the bone so that she'll be allowed to go on the plane to these parties that her owner goes to and get hugs from all the people at the party. And then we switch to the earlier episode where the bone was one of the loops of the swing in the park. And we see it from Can-Can's point of view, so this time we don't hear Akio Otsuka's voice at all. Because that is internal monologue of Shiro. That's his inner hero. And then she doesn't get the bone because Shiro somehow resists her charms. And then as she's pondering this, we see a massive explosion in the background.
Yeah, you're kind of better off without it there, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it explodes for them, if either Dekapu or Can-Can.
Yeah, I think it's actually the teleporter that explodes it, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Other than that, it's just a really nice bone-shaped thing.
That smells lovely.
Smells great, but won't make you president of the world.
No.
Even her dog farts are beautiful.
Because I thought it was going to be it is tragic, but it's a tragedy that Can-Can herself does not seem to be aware of.
Yeah, she's too up and like looking good to realize that looking good isn't the be all and end all, and her solution to this is to be the best looking thing with this bobo bone. It's like, yeah, you just kind of, no matter how you, and she keeps spraying the sprayer to make herself, the perfumer to make herself smell better and harder each time, and it's like, yeah, it's not working though, so you gotta try something else.
Yeah.
Well, this empty hedonism isn't filling this void in my soul. So obviously you're not putting in enough empty hedonism into there. So
clearly that's like, the solution, yeah.
Gotta fight fire with fire. Shouldn't you fight fire with water? Nope. Not the way I heard it.
Then, dragging us back into the present day by sending us back in time, it's Extra Olympia Kyklos. Episode 6, Symposium Tonight. The mayor and the owl show up to insult Demetrius. And Demetrius says, no, the people like me. Then we get some Vox Pops, or the Greek equivalent of Vox Pops. And this is denied by the public, as they also use this time to insult him.
He makes great parts, but those paintings...
Then we get a discussion of what sort of rewards you get at the Olympics and similar sports events in ancient Greece. You might get wreaths, you might get celery, you may get masses of olive oil. This causes time travel to occur, the crisis of thoughts that Demetrius has.
Well, he has to come up with a new thing for a new Olympics. So, yes. Yeah, he has to go to the future to find it.
And he arrives at school sports day, upside down, in, I can't remember the name of that game where people throw beanbags through the basket.
Or the beanbag, yeah.
Because you're representing Oni, aren't you? I learned this from watching Yusuke Asura.
ball bag.
And he's very impressed by the reversible hat that the children is wearing. A child is wearing.
So they can switch teams. Yeah, yes. It's like a hat that's the color of either team. And he thinks it's like,
Ares helmet.
Ares.
Yes, but it also turns out.
And transforming.
Yes, it turns out that animating a reversible hat is too hard. So just get a child in and have them reverse a hat.
Well, I mean, like, the 2D guys aren't really animated per se in this, so that's fair enough.
Then they're pondering what other rewards, and he's thinking, well, it used to be, if you won, the loser would be killed and their skull turned into a goblet. And then he's looking at the professor's head as a...
If only there was a barbarian skull nearby.
But then he sees a wonder item in the window of a shop. I did like him pressing his face up against the window as a plasticine man.
That was some fun plasticine squishing, yeah.
Tactile.
What is this toilet?
This beautiful porcelain marvel of science.
This throne worthy for Zeus himself.
Yeah, and he climbs into the display, and then a TV which is being displayed in the same window shows a superhero called Dengeki Carmen, who is saving the same boy who changed his hat earlier from a villain, because it's the same actor. And this electrical-powered superhero causes him to travel back in time again, but with the toilet. And then we get a very specific historical joke from the professor, which requires notes, about the Luzon vase that a trader gave to Hideyoshi, the our friend from Ninja Girl and Samurai Master.
Monkey Boy.
Yes, when he was in charge of Japan, without him knowing that these vases were used as toilets. From where they came from. But meanwhile.
That's a really nice vase. It's used for what? Yeah.
But meanwhile, in the past, everyone is very impressed with this toilet. And so they drink out of it.
Well, yeah, you have your man going like, oh man, I want to win that trophy so I can drink wine out of it. Just picture of him drinking out of a toilet. And you're just like, yeah, this is pretty funny. It's stupid, but I like it.
And then the song is about how to party at the Olympics.
Yeah.
Dear.
It is another good one. I did enjoy it. Now let me copy this Twitter chain of thoughts I had while I was watching Woodpecker Detective's Office. an episode I have watched twice and still not sure about. But there you go.
Okay.
So it turns out, let's get to the crux of the thing. As we talk about episode 12 of Woodpecker Detective's Office, Pale Blue Skies. It was Kaio all along. The landlady. Yeah. Or the landlady's... Well, she's the landlady. I don't know what...
No, she's the landlady.
She is, but she's not an adult until this episode, apparently.
She's been doing all the landlady work, and everyone calls her landlady, and people pay her the rent, so...
Yes, and when she's gone...
I don't know what else you call her.
And when she's gone, they're just happy to continue staying there without having to pay rent. Yeah, it turns out, so none of the Accuser X murders were actually murders. They were suicides. And they'd been people who'd been confessing how they felt at the church, but Kaio was on the other side of the confessional booth saying, oh, you want to commit suicide? Yes, you should commit suicide. But if you're going to commit suicide, at least make your death change
Name
something.
Name your accuser yes. in a letter and then kill yourself so that everyone knows who fucking killed you.
Yes. And, Ishikawa's investigating this, and this is the bit which isn't very clear. He suspects that she's doing it to somebody else, And to stop him from doing it, he invites him to his mate's birthday party.
Like, yeah, it's like, hey, you're going to have a birthday next month, so I'm going to invite this guy who's probably suicidal to your birthday party so he feels good about life and shit.
And then make him pay for the party.
He also took his friend's money to pay for his own birthday party and then didn't pay him back. So he got paid like twice. He got the payment from the suicidal guy to have the birthday party. And also he took his friend's money and presumably spent it.
I guess.
Like, he did a good thing with taking two people's money. But, yeah.
And then he confronts Kayo and basically then tells her, you've not done anything wrong.
I think it, the way he was trying to get it, like, the way she saw it, she was replacing the letters with people who she thought was evil. So she was, yes, the one changing out the accusatory letters, which was kind of the thing of the crime. And she, from her point of view, she was trying to have it that these people's lives would have purpose because they'd get the bad people in trouble,
yes,
basically. Whereas he kind of sees it, well, these people would have killed themselves anyway. You just directed themselves to your own fucking ends, but your hands aren't bloodstained. You didn't actually kill anyone.
Yeah.
So you can still walk away, I guess, is the way he was trying to
Why not,
get it across to her.
Yeah, and also I've packed you a lunch because earlier she'd packed him a lunch, or not made him a lunch, and he's packed the same lunch that, and there was a line about how making a rice ball for somebody. And
yeah, he comes down in the morning when the lads are all drunk after the birthday party, and he's talking to the woman there, and she's like, this isn't a fucking inn, you know, you guys are all asleep, some more homoerotic than others, and he's packing the rice ball, and it's like, yeah, someone told me that they really learned what living for others was, or the purpose of their life,
yes,
by making rice balls. And so he's making her pack lunch in that moment, in the morning after the birthday party.
Yes. And then she takes the train with this packed lunch and then reads a verse of his. It's not the full poem. About when he, and this is where I was like, oh, I think I need to know more about him. I need to know more about his work. Cause the show itself isn't telling you that. So not only is that a line of his verse about when he was 15, so it's not about her being 15, it's about when he was 15.
It's like he's taken this verse out of his poem that would relate to her specifically, but isn't a poem about her.
But that's
not a poem written for her.
Yeah, but that specific line also appears on a memorial plaque for him.
Hmm.
And also, as I learned when I was reading around, when he was 15 was when he was, his worldview changed based on, Shozo Tanaka's environmental activism that was happening then.
Hmm.
And then I've mentioned before, it's like around this time, he's greatly affected by, someone who was also into Kropotkin being, persecuted and executed, and the general anti-democratic crackdown on socialists. None of that is,
like, it's all implied
this.
Because
it's all implied.
One of the
last
shots of him is him playing the, I've forgotten the name of the tune again. The on the violin again. Another Western thing to suggest. Yeah,
and we've seen him. We've seen him with the Kropotkin book, and I don't think there's anything alluded to. He wrote all these, like, his memoirs in Romanji, so no one else would be able to read it. That's not a thing which comes up here. But again, I wonder if there's a load of allusions, particularly in this plot, because I don't think this plot is in the book. And I was like, oh, is Kayo supposed to be a representation of the other Ishikawa that we don't really see in the story? Like the social minded one who's not the necessarily the fop that he's presenting.
She's actively trying to kill industrialists and people who are screwing over other people. So yeah, that seems to be what she might represent for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, and then we get a brief flash forward, where he's clearly dead, but his mate keeps on checking in the room he used to be in.
He's leaving in a copy, like I presume a new copy of, some of his poems.
Was it, something toys?
Oh, yeah, it definitely was Toys.
Yeah, I think that particular book was like published incredibly, not incredibly quickly, but happened to be published like pretty soon after he died.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a recent one by the look of it. And he wanted to
I guess, but because it seemed like 10 years later, I think they said. But I think in real
life, he's so much older in 10 years. It's ridiculous.
Yes. And he's the guy who lived a very long time out of this life. So while I enjoyed the series overall, I got the feeling like I was missing something, but there was enough glimpses of stuff that made me not want to judge it harshly for not telling me that stuff.
Yeah, especially like this episode, a lot of it is, but this episode especially, I think it was very much so you need to be kind of in the know about these guys and get the references basically.
Yeah.
Which is a little tough, but overall, yeah, still quite good.
And the mystery's not fair either.
The fucking bit where he's like dun dun dun, and he looks down, and the music makes a noise, and I could tell he was looking at her sandals when she ran into the house to get.
I know, show you the viewer.
Like, you didn't show me the sandals, you son of a bitch. Like I did, like I rewinded it and paused it, and I was like, well, I can see one sandal is upside down, but other than that, I can discern nothing from
a single frame.
Yeah, that's what I got from watching it a second time. I was like, oh, you swines. What are you doing to me?
I think the thing was he knew she was in the church one day because there was a broken glass window because one of the kids was playing ball or something and broke a stained glass window and she had stained glass in the bottom of her shoe, which means she was in the church that day, which implied that she was there to talk to that guy and that kind of thing. And I was just like, yeah, but you didn't show me the glass in her shoe. You didn't show me that the stained glass was broken. You didn't let me solve it.
Yeah. Whereas I think they've been fairer on the other stuff. That might just be because this isn't a mystery taken out of, and this was the only episode which had like a disclaimer in the front as well. So I don't know whether that had anything to do with it too, whether in adapting the book, the disclaimer was already taken into account by saying it's come out of the book. And if you've got any complaints, please go to the original author. But yeah, it wasn't like the warning at the end of Babylon where you're like, oh shit's gonna really hit the fan. We suddenly start getting content warnings on that. But moving on to something I assume does not need such content warnings. It is Fruits Basket episode 13, Sure Thing. Who's the sure thing here?
It's a sure thing that Yuki is going to have trouble getting along with his charges in the student council because they are a bunch of crazy people. His vice president, let's get to him first. Oh, he's kind of having his first meeting and getting to know the people who are under him, some of whom he's met already. But he has one of his secretaries, Kimmy, likes stirring shit and bending men to her will. Auto secretary Sakuragi is just this young lad who's completely on edge and tense all the time and seems to view Yuki as his rival, even though he's only like a first year or some shit. Machi has crippling social anxiety and doesn't ever speak to anybody or do anything at all. And Kakeru, his vice president, is some kind of a jackass.
Yes, it's not really it's a bit of an awkward one.
So he's having trouble dealing with this. Kimmy just kind of comes along when the senior girls are trying.
The Yuki fan club are
trying
to.
They're making eyes at them and saying, oh, we just got you a little something, you know, just a token of our appreciation.
They got him some chocolates on holiday. He apologizes saying, I was like, oh, I didn't get you guys nothing. And they're composing poems in their head about him. And she comes in and is like, hey, cool, Yuki, share that chocolate with me. You know, just being really, does she start calling him Yun-Yun at that stage?
Yun-Yun.
Yeah.
And then Kaku starts doing it too and points into Gus, call me that by a nickname, or it's going to stick. And it does stick.
It's great. It sounds like a panda's name. How does that help?
No, she just likes to put on a cute act to make men do her bidding, and she just likes stirring shit. And this is one of the secretaries of the club. Now he's Sakuragi. He's just like a very tense, angry young man who goes off on the side of things. Real, if you got time to lean, you got time to clean kind of guy. And Machi, the treasurer, we met before, she was kind of digging around the room. There was all scattered things around, but she barely says anything to anybody, but doesn't really like want to engaging people. Again, crippling so much to anxiety.
Mm.
And these are all kind of very like loud and big, very, very personalities. And he's trying to, Yuki's trying to like rein them in and trying to run the club responsibly because he's been, you know, he's, you know, anxious about wanting to do a good job. He wants to like, live up to people's belief in him that he'd be able to take on this task. And he's being very tough and understanding. He's going around to like the club's one by one, ask him how you're doing, if you've got everything you need, anything you need help with. Kaku responds is very boring. Why are we doing this? It's like, well,
yeah,
it's
like if they need anything, they can come to us, the student council. And Yuki's like, no, we should go to them because we can see what conditions they're working in and we get to talk to them and see what they're doing. Yeah. I prefer like the more hands-on thing.
We're a council by the students for the students.
Yeah, yeah. We have to do something as well because otherwise what's the point of us? Yeah. At that point, that's the vice president meets his mates he used to play soccer with.
Yeah.
That he has like this really easygoing attitude despite still being kind of a prick to them. And yeah. Yuki's kind of like, I wish I fucking had that kind of charisma.
He's
easygoing stuff.
Yeah, Kakaru is an absolute jackass who's more of who wants to have a meeting be about what color are you going to be in the Sentai team that I'm going to base this council on. But he has his uses. He does seem to get along with people fairly readily and easily, which Yuki can't really do.
Yuki says one of the people he reminds him of obviously is his cousin, who is just like, I wish I, like, I obviously he wouldn't say it to his cat cousin. It's just like that kind of natural being able to just chat to people without it being a thing. Cause it's always like a big thing with him. And he's always, it's not that he feels he's over people. It's, that's the way people treat him. So there's always this distance. Yeah.
Yeah. But inside he feels completely inadequate. Because he's comparing himself to other people like Kakaru or even Kyo who, you know, to have the things, the qualities that he feels that he lacks.
Mm.
But he's a good lad, you know, and he's trying to get control of the meeting because obviously Machi is getting bothered by it and he's trying to calm everything down, but to little success. But he's going to get something good out of there, so he goes to about the gardening club to carry a few potted plants to, you know, other side of school or wherever it's going to go.
Yeah,
to.
They need to be repotted or reseeded or something, yeah.
Yeah, and when he goes around there, Kakaru catches him up and says, you know what you're doing? Oh, I'm just doing this thing for the gardening club, you know, we got to help out, you know, because we're student council, we've got to be there for them. But I'm saying, man, that sounds so boring. Hey! You know the, your cousin Kyo, you know, that, and that girl, what's her name, Toru Honda or what have you? Are they going out or whatever? Does it seem that way? Yeah, no, I don't know. The guy around Kyo, no, it seems an awful lot like one not happier than you are. I don't know what to do with that is, man. Like, and then that's when Yuki just kind of just goes off on him. Is this fucking a joke to you? Is this funny? Do you like going around and querying people as to how happy they are or comparing them to their success or whatever that to... To yourself, is that fun for you? Does this make that make you happy? And Kaku was like, "What the fuck is wrong with you, man? You're not my mom. You don't know my life." And just keep going back and forth and saying, "Yeah, sorry, man. I'm just by projecting because I feel very inadequate and inferior on the inside. So I'm probably just blowing up on you because that's the way I feel. And I'm sorry about that."
Yeah, he apologizes angrily but also sincerely, which I think is important.
Yeah, and. This is, by the way, this is also after that, Kakaru was just kicked the tray of plants, like, out of his hands, dickhead move there right now. But the way Yuki's kind of just angrily apologizing for him, saying, this is the way I fun feel inside, I fun, like, see someone like you, or he's kind of saying it's more to himself, feel everything that I can't feel that I lack, and then, like, I'm constantly, everyone, like, looks up to me to do things, but I'm, feel completely like low down and inadequate and inferior to everybody else in my life, and I gotta like try and deal with that feeling, but it keeps bubbling back up, especially now. And West put Kakaru comes down and says, "Man, Yuki, you get people. You understand them. You're compassionate. You actually like try to meet their feelings head on."
Yuki is comparing himself of other people is Yuki actually puts himself in other people's shoes and tries to understand them from their point of view, which is a thing he doesn't do. So yeah, like this feeling of inadequacy is also like linked to being compassionate.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's a nice way of showing it, like your flaws are also strengths in a different light.
Yeah. And you know, you should never measure yourself by someone else's yardstick. Mm-hmm. I think this is like a relevant message in any era, but it feels like it's only going on more with what so much like social media has kind of latched onto every facet of our waking life now.
Mm.
And you're constantly just thinking, oh, you get that dopamine hit when you see the little numbers. And that's not like genuine or lasting or fulfilling like happiness in yourself. You shouldn't be comparing yourself to others. And just be happy and do your own thing. But that's something you got over time. And Kaku is just fucking sorry about that. I'll kill the flowers. It's my fucking fault. I get them over anyway. And Yuki can see like, oh, this is going to be probably fucking difficult to manage with these pack of lunatics, but it'll be maybe a real growing opportunity for me because, I can't be comparing myself off of them. They're looking to me to like be the leader and head of this thing. So I need to try and, embrace what qualities I have and push them to the fore rather than look to others for what I'm lacking. I should be like emphasizing what I have, which, you know, someone just pointed out, just said to be straight out was there that I'm good at understanding people. So maybe this thing I feel or I'm looking into someone else's, like, you know, in their life and how they're feeling, it can be a good thing rather than a source of constant like stress and grief for me. You know, it's good. Let's see him, because we saw so much going on, I think more with Kyo's side and that kind of blossoming romance which is happening with Toru, to see him have some development going on independent of that, because we can kind of see, yeah, it's going to be a Kyo and Toru romance that's going to come out of that. That seems to be fairly like clear-cut at this stage, just not really accomplishing. He's trying to as well. He's getting like angry about it. Let's see. And Kyo is like hanging out with Toru a lot, and he seems happier in himself lately as well. I've been kind of thinking, oh, well, I can't be trying to pursue that because that's maybe his happiness and her happiness. It's their happiness. I shouldn't be trying to pursue that maybe. I should try to find something for myself maybe. And
yeah, I did see people in the comments like complaining like Toru hasn't been in like the last two episodes. And I'm like, it's nice to see what the other characters are doing and that they have their own life. I mean, like, she's great. She's a great character, but it's nice to see they have things to do outside of her and her existence, but you can see the way her influence has changed them as people, and that's kind of what the last two episodes have been about. So I've been enjoying them.
Yeah, it's nice as well to have one episode that's just for the most part it's broad comedy. They're true. Just kind of loud kind of personalities at the moment, but we'll get to know them as things go on. But after a lot of the very heavy content, especially summer holiday house, it's just a nice little thing to break it up. And again, just to see Yuki have his own little his own little storyline to follow there and find whatever he's missing, maybe he's looking for at the end of it.
And this is going through to the next season, isn't it?
I believe so. Yeah,
I think there's an episode 14 up.
Well, it's going to be like, if it's going to go for 52 from the arc, this is going straight to the end, which is why I was thinking like, no, it'll probably be enough because, I can remember from reading it, it seemed like there's a lot more dense, like, final year of school stuff, particularly with Kakiru and Machi and, these other characters in the student council, but I think they covered a good bit of ground in just this episode, at least as far as introducing them and kind of, giving you a glimpse of the dynamic there. Like, we know that, well, Kimi and now he's sort of just sort of foils for the rest of them, but there's something deeper going on between Kakeru and Machi, because Kakeru says as well when Yuki goes off at him that you phrase it, you said the exact same thing that she said all that time ago. What does that mean? So, you know, little glimpses.
No Karakuri Circus this, then, you think, in terms of not going to have to score.
Just, like, jumping around.
Yeah, it seems like anything, it's going to just trim the fat in them for the most part. I mean, it's been pretty good at doing that, so.
They have reordered things around before and maybe updated certain things on them. I think particularly of, I've forgotten the name of which cousin it was, but it was the cousin, the Soma cousin who was the monkey and enjoyed dressing up in drag. That was handled a little bit more, it's still handled a little, like, fairly alright in the comic, even though it was kind of played a bit more for humor and that, which, you know, may or may not, find to your taste, but I felt it was handled a little bit more, compassion and kindness in this adaptation, when it did it in the anime here. So, you know, and just like moving things around for ease of, story flow as well. That's good. You wouldn't notice otherwise.
Then we've got Hot Off the Presses from Netflix. or lukewarm off the presses, given that it was on Netflix in Japan 13 weeks ago.
It's tearing off the plastic seal on the top. It's still good.
BNA, episode 1, Runaway Raccoon, in which we meet Michiru Kagemori, a raccoon woman, or is she a tanuki woman? She's a tanuki woman. Who's on the run. She's trying to get to Anima City.
I'm glad for one of these new cartoons to not have any political message and just be about cool action fun times, you know?
Another one of these autonomous cities. But this one is one where if you're a beast man, it's okay for you to live. Cause if you don't live out, if you live outside there, you may be attacked by prejudiced humans. This city has been kindly been set up by the Sylvester Pharmaceuticals and their leader, Alan Sylvester, who definitely won't turn out to be a villain, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, the head of most pharmaceutical conglomerates are completely on the level of nice people all around. They've never done anything wrong or illegal or insidious in recorded human history.
And he doesn't look incredibly like the villain. In Promare.
what kind of fucking pharmaceutical king would ring up the mayor of a town, say, congrats on the anniversary, remember I can shut you down at any fucking time, so don't fuck up, bye. Like, yeah, like a totally sound out dude would be the guy who'd make that kind of call.
I thought that was the prime minister making that call.
I thought that was him. No, you might be right.
That was the Prime Minister.
My bad. It was still a very dick move.
Yes. Like, he's some fucking ammo people locked up in that ghetto we made for him, right?
So she's trying to get there, and she makes it out of the subway and hops on top of the bus. But then she's hunted down by mobile hunters. They've got motorcycles and a jeep, and they've got crossbows. And they basically explain that, oh, this is the only way you can get to Anima City, so we just patrol this area looking for beast men to kill.
Yeah, this is one of the routes to it, so easy fucking just to sit and wait, I guess.
Yes, so they are about to kill her when she is saved by Susie from Little Witch Academia.
I was delighted when I heard her. I was just like, ah, oh, brilliant. Yeah, I know she's going to be a bit of a dick, but she's an alright, you know.
Mariatami, a mink beast man.
Not a weasel.
No. And her associates. And, they help Michiru escape in return for all her money.
Well, I mean, like she's saying on the board, or it's like, oh, I'm not going to fucking charge anything. This is a charity thing. And she's like, yeah, yeah, how much? And he's like, I'm very, very cynical. It's like, this world has taught me to be cynical. Every penny you got then. Which does sound more like Susie.
Then she gets to the city. There's a festival going on. Everything's great. She meets a wolf man who's crying at the beauty of this city.
Well, it's very threatening at first, because all this loom out of darkness, the eyes are just peering out from the shadows. It's like, oh god, I'm going to get jumped, damn it, die. But no, surprise! Welcome, citizen.
Coincidentally, their 10th anniversary as a city, I think.
Then a monkey pickpockets her, and the monkey appears to be...
Picks her tail pocket?
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure how it works, yeah.
Appears to be in league with Mary. And as she's pursuing the monkey, she spots some sort of canine beast man.
It could be a fox, or it could be a coyote.
Yes. I'm going to say it's a husky, because he's smaller than the wolf.
hiding under the stands, or it's like a, not the stands, it's a...
It's for the big screen. TV projection, yeah.
Yeah, for the big,
And it's a bomb, he's laid a bomb. And initially, the wolf, who is Shiro Ogami, suspects Michiru. But she
does admit to punching it in frustration at not being able to find that pickpocket.
She's like, a punch would knock it over. And then he's like...
A punch wouldn't make it explode. He's like, you're right. And then you haven't considered that.
It's just, he's really intense, but he's really fucking stupid. Cause,
yeah, it's a good combo.
He's tracking these guys down that because, you know, they set off a bomb and tried to, like, probably kill people. One saying, you ruined the festival for everybody. Now no one's going to have a good time. I'm going to beat the fuck out of you when I find you.
Yeah.
He uses his sense of smell to track the bomber and confront him. But the bomber's got assistants. They're a gang of three. There's a lion, a deer, and this other fella. And the lion and the deer seem much tougher than the bomber. And I was wishing the lion was an ox so that they could have just been the enforcers out of Spider-Man. Because
I was getting more a vibe of the mercenary team from Predator off of them, honestly.
Did any? I'm trying to think of like a team of three that one of them had like an eye patch because the deer had an eye patch.
Hang on, what were
that's
the
gotta be a thing as well.
What were the three animal mask guys in Batman?
Oh, that was the fox, the shark, and it was Lancey and Eric. What was it? A vulture or something? Was the other guy?
Okay.
The terrible trio or something like that.
Because, yeah, this is clearly Imayashi storyboarding the second half of the episode. do you think? Because Shiro's just drawn so much like a superhero. With his big flappy coat. And
I saw people taking the piss out of the court saying he looks like I can't think
Rick
of
Rick Astley.
Yes, exactly. But it's like, no, that's the fucking look dramatic as shit that's when you're jumping around and shit.
Yeah, that's his superhero cape. Yeah, and then he gets in the fight, but he gets carried away, and Vichiru's like, stop, they're already dead.
You shouldn't be like, I know they did horrible things, but they're also beastmen, so you should not kill them. And he's like, yeah, but they work with humans, and all humans suck. And she's like, well, all humans suck, I'm one of those.
Oh, I used to be anyway.
Until this morning, and then he's like, you don't look like a human, and that's kind of where the episode ends.
What a great cut. It's like, no, you're not. also, her tail flops up to 10 times its size or something.
Yes, amazing static electricity.
This was very good.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
I went into it thinking, maybe I'm over triggers stuff. Maybe Pro Bear was the ultimate, and
I filled you up. They couldn't talk. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh no. This is the triggers stuff is exactly my thing. And, here we are again. Let's hope they remember to pay the in between animators this time.
Please. Yeah.
I'll allow them a few duds because this was so good. And if they keep up any of this kind of quality over a few episodes, I'm just like, yeah, this is what I came for. This is good stuff.
It does speak a little bit of, you know, its trigger aesthetic as all get up, but there is, I'm feeling at least, a progression of that because I've latched onto that neon pink and neon blue color palette.
That last scene was like fucking gorgeous. The way they had the light, the cool blues in the shade and the hot pink and from the highlights. Really good looking stuff. Yeah.
It's just like a really nice, different color palette. I'm more used to like the kind of the intense reds and bright yellows. I'm going back to probably Gurren Lagann in particular. I suppose, Senketsu in Kill la Kill was that color scheme as well. That's lots of blacks and reds and bright yellows there too. But it's just like different, just really synthwave YouTube video kind of look to it. No, it's I like what I do to it. It's familiar, but it's just like so much like amplified and exaggerated that you don't mind that. You know, it could be something that's really referencing a lot of different things all at once. It kind of feels chaotic, but I always feel like when I do this, this grabs me.
I feel like the thing I really liked is that I've never seen before, but possibly I've seen it in a variation in a Looney Tunes cartoon, is the scent that became like solid shapes. I was like, oh, that's good looking, where it's like a stop motion thing of the guy running away, but as his scent trail. Really lovely stuff.
I was thinking a little bit of, if you remember in Dororo, when Yakimaru, before he gets like a more of his senses back, how he perceives the world with two auras.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was
it's
thinking
definitely like a nice unique way of visualizing something that isn't visual.
Yeah, not directly similar, but it reminded me a little of some of the Daredevil stuff of recent years, particularly I think Marcos right. Martin's thing when he would do like the world solidly made out of the words of the object for the radar sense. I see. So this is Kazuki Nakashima, but we also will have two episodes from Kimiko Ueno. Yes, I like her a lot, but I was about to say from popular other anthropomorphic show, Pingu. And, from another CG anthropomorphic show is Nanami Higuchi from Beastars. The head writer on Beastars is doing two episodes of this as well.
What a time to be alive if you're a furry. It's great.
We get like very, very prominent, very well received and regarded and very well produced. Animated works being made about these things, and only one of them really has anything fairly bawdy in it. Like Beastars can get a bit not safe for work.
I mean that's definitely what it's going for with its theme, but yeah, for sure.
I'm sure this will probably have its moments set down the line as well.
I mean, Mr. Trigger, so yeah, probably.
But there's so much shit going on, it's like you can get drowned out by everything else. But either mind. I'm not expecting anything particularly subtle or nuanced here. This is kind of it's always been their brand pretty much, but they've really kind of leaned into it and embraced it with Promare especially, where we have our heroes who are too dumb to lose.
This is Yo Yoshinari directed it. The connection is with Nanami Higuchi is that they did, I think, 5 episodes of Little Witch Academia TV as well. So,
oh, okay.
That's the carryover there.
But
yeah, no, I was like, this is it. And also, it's a nice first episode in that it tells you just enough, but it doesn't like overwhelm you with information. You can just,
It like sticks you in super, super deep to it. Like you just thrust you into the whole society and everything, but you kind of want to know more. It's like, wait, what are the specifics of this? And also in that scene, didn't the mayor and her armadillo aide become human for a second? What's up with that?
Yeah.
You want to know more. Yeah.
But you're kind of seeing that they seem to have disguises that they can wear out. More like humans. I mean, you see it in the opening credits.
Yeah, Mary did it as well.
But Mary turns up as well.
Then next up, we've got Wacky TV Na Na Na, Chase the Kraken Monster, Episode 12, Eggplant, the Unrivaled Director. In which we eat another crew searching for the... They're just doing a survivalist show, aren't they?
Yeah.
They survive on the island.
Because they land on the island and they see... they're really hungry. They get the captain to fix the boat and they're going to look for fish. Oh, look, there's a pool of, like, teeming with fish. That's crazy. And your man says, I've got cool survival skills from being a director. I'm actually really bad at this.
Turns out
the lads
close.
Catch them every time. It's weird.
I'm getting very close to fitting on the last step. A lot of my career in TV.
And then an eggplant shows up yelling at them to put the fish back. And they're like, no, we caught this. And he's like, no, those are my fish. I've been breeding them. Look. And then it pans out and there's a barrier.
It's a bunch of floats. It's a fish farm, basically.
Yes.
It's easy to catch fish when they're in a fucking barrel, I guess,
And then they recognize him as the director from, what was the name of the TV Asahi knockoff?
Oh,
is it Yuha?
TV?
Yuhi? Yeah, I think it's Yuhi. I think someone in the comments said it's a north-south, whichever one's one way, it's the other way. And this is based on a real person who is well known for everything they claim this guy's well known for being a director of survivalist shows who would often put himself into the action. And he's also known for painting himself purple. In case you're like me and confused when you look at his avatar and think, are you in blackface, mate? And then you scroll down through the images and you go, oh no, it's purple because he sticks. So every time there's a picture of him painted purple, he sticks a eggplant emoji in there. Possibly to clarify. I don't know.
Yeah, but couldn't you have, like, gotten a brighter shade of makeup or paint or whatever you're using?
Yeah. So, like, I wonder if there's a story behind it of whether it was, like, a specific plant dye that he...
It could have been, like, a specific survivalist thing where he ended up in a melon patch or something like that and came out that specific shade. But it's like, yeah, you probably should have added...
If you smear this, like, tar, this resin from this tree all over your skin, it'll protect you from sunburns, but also it'll...
Or mosquitoes or some bollocks.
Dye your skin this color for the next week.
The rest of the episode is pretty much jokes about how crappy TV Tokyo is compared to TV Asahi.
They've got so many affiliates, holy shit.
Can you give us a couple?
Yeah, so they've got some rivals to deal with now.
It's like the, I don't know, they're Bear Grylls and I don't know what Mackie TV and NNR are like. Koala cabinet.
But this is the Kraken Island, so this should be good to find the Kraken eventually, maybe.
Maybe. We're halfway through the series. Good chance that the Kraken will show up and those two giant monsters and Tetsumi Fujinami.
And wrestling, yeah.
They're going to find it the odd, like, follow it to the lost city of Atlantis or whatever paths for Atlantis. So it's just like kind of like a legendary or supposed to be like sunken city. I suppose it'd be the fucking the Dragon God's Palace, whatever it's called, underwater.
I think the Bermuda Triangle. Isn't that the way it's supposed to be in this story? I think that was the start of the
episode. Is that where it's supposed to be, Bermuda Triangle? I don't know. I don't know what the fuck they are in the world now. I'm sure they know where they are.
Yeah. I mean, they could be nowhere near where they started off. That is a good point.
That's true. They did get swallowed by a whale partway through.
Yes. Yeah, we'll see where the story goes. Then we've got... I only watched one... live action thing this time, partly because I didn't want this podcast to go too late as we're recording later. Kira Major, episode 13, War in Subterranea. So the gist of this is, it's more information about Prince, Takemichi. So his dad was a mate of the king's, and the king used to come to Earth and the pair of them would go treasure hunting. Then one day Takemichi decided to help out when they found some treasure and he got possessed by a monstone. And to save him, the king took him to Crystalia and used the Kira stones to restore him, and there he became a prince. And it turns out, as we learned by the end of this episode, that Murio, the guy played by the guy who plays Picotaro, is Takemichi's little brother. So apparently he's barely aged the 30 years he was in the Crystal Kingdom. And meanwhile, his little brother is now 45 years old. But he has built a giant drill machine for him. And the rest of the gist of the episode is him saying that I want to go treasure hunting. I don't want to help you guys out. And his sister going, this is why he's no use. We shouldn't trust him. But every time he runs off, he keeps on running back to help them out. And then eventually the Red Kira Major confronts him and goes, I don't think you really do like treasure hunting. I think what you really like is helping people by the fact that you keep on ignoring the treasure hunting to come and help us. Then he runs across his uncle. His uncle makes a brief attempt to, like, try and make him go, oh, come over to the dark side. It's nice here. And also, the reason it's war in Subterranea, because there's, like, a Venus flytrap keeps on attacking people, and they're like, is this a Venus flytrap mask? And they're like, eventually they're like, no, because all we see is the Venus flytraps. We don't see it attached to anybody. And then they go underground, and they see the monster's actually underground with all these Venus flytraps coming out of its head. But yeah, that's the story. So, he is apparently, the big brother of the guy who's now his big brother because he's 30 or so years old. I guess he has aged a bit because I don't think this guy is 17 who's playing him, but, yeah, the age balance and the power balance is, I think this is definitely going to give, the guy playing Miryu more to do because he's going to get to act like a little brother against someone who is much younger than him, which should be fun. And eventually I will catch up with Kamen Rider 01. I will say part of the problem is I feel like they stay in the costumes a lot more in Kira Major. So it's not quite so, awkward seeing people close to each other not wearing masks.
Okay.
You know, there's something in the back of your mind where you're thinking, do you really need to be doing this? Is it really safe for you to be doing this?
There's literally a show that involves masks and stuff. It's very easy to solve this problem.
One of you and Kira Major has already had it. And that does not mean you're immune to it. Do you really need to be doing that? For some reason it feels worse in 01 than in Kira Major. I don't know why. Maybe it's because, as I say, most time is spent with people in full body suits and a mask fighting other things in full body suits and masks. And in one case, someone wearing a mask over a mask with the uncle. So there you go.
Wouldn't that be amazing if, because of like COVID, like Sentai just became like the go-to show for everything? Sentai, tragedy, Sentai.
Everything has to be done to the medium of masks now. Yeah. Imagine like Home and Away, Coronation Street, all wearing like helmets.
I follow the son of El Santo on Twitter, and he's wearing the luchador mask, but he was wearing like a mask over his mouth that had a picture of the luchador mask that he's wearing on it. And I was just like, oh, that's fucking brilliant.
Oh, man.
So good. I don't know where he got that, but it looks amazing.
Oh, he's probably been watching Air Master, which says Lucha Master, who's got a regular luchador mask, and then underneath that, an angry luchador mask.
They are doing Corey again, aren't they, now, and EastEnders. I think they're filming them again, because I saw somebody put a clip and a screenshot of the same episode where, like, between scenes, somebody's hair colour had changed and they'd grown a beard.
I think they were filming it was like a limited cast interaction, you know. It was just filmed like in this one room in the set, and then they'll do a similar thing, only like a handful of them in there, and that's gonna like stitch the scenes together.
Gotcha. Well, I guess if the pubs reopen, you have to fucking do the show where everyone goes to the pub, right?
See, that's going to be a good writing test, because nobody can just kind of burst into the pub dramatically and say, what are you doing with my boyfriend, my husband? And sorry, did you book in? Oh, yeah, sorry, I got a party of four coming in for 7 o'clock. Okay, come on in. What would you like to drink?
The hand sanitizer is on the right there, if you'd just like to do that. Yeah. Oh, obviously, yes.
There's definitely an argument for bringing the soaps back to act as public service announcements of like, this is how you should behave and this is how you should not behave. Cause that tends to be, they use soaps for that on TV, and they definitely use it for the Archers. I just wonder if it probably would be useful to use them in this way, as long as you're not putting the actors' lives at risk.
Yeah, if the actors are wearing masks in their role, and it could be a new golden age of expressive eyebrows.
Exactly. Where's Eugene Levy when you need him? Then we've got Healing Good, Pretty Cure, episode 14. What was the title of this? I did write it down, but not...
Energy Source, Sukoyaka Festival.
That's the girl.
Yeah, if only all of our diseases could be cured as easily as, well, maybe not as easy, but as Nodica's. But she goes to get a checkup at the doctor and gives her a clean bit of health. Whatever was up with you, you know, it was kind of allergy. But probably something about the city, you know, maybe it's the air or the water or the hot springs or the fact you've got magical powers and you've been doing rider kicks to monsters for 13 straight weeks now. It's probably got good for the constitution. So just in time. Because it's going to be destroying a big festival in the city to celebrate how nice city it is. And meet up with Anata and Chiyu and all of the little animals. And then they're going to go around and just have a great time having all these, all the street food, all the, fried stuff and, hot buns, things, food on sticks. Especially the popular local, the sweet sticky buns, the sweet steam buns even, which are the most popular thing that everyone wants to get. But oh no, the steamer's broken down, and this guy can't sell his treats anymore, but local restaurants are going to pitch in for and say, no man, this is the way our city does, like our restaurants have got steamers in the back, you can just use ours and we'll make enough steam buns for everybody. Because we're just kind of see that we're at, where everybody pitches in and many hands make light work. And Burger Capios. Maybe that's kind of it as well, because people here is just so, so kind of nice and welcoming and helpful. You know, when someone's even if a little bit in trouble or a little bit in need of help, that everyone pitches in, and this big problem, this seems like just a little thing. So this big problem I have with trying to recover from this illness as well as that I had, which I won't tell you what it is just yet. Feel like I got over in no time because I've been like had all of ye, I've met all of ye, we've been having adventures and fighting monsters, getting a lot of exercise. It's pretty good. Nothing can spoil this mood, not even when Patate Moda, the mutant Koipu, he's been sent here by his senpai to stir some trouble. I'm thinking, I'm not going to be his henchman, but I'm going to do a stunt right here. I'll get me some brownie points with the boss, and then senpai will be my henchman, and I'll be the senpai. Yeah, that's what I'll do. He gets like a little like electric personal fan. I suppose you can buy him for like a few quid at one of the stalls, a little cheap thing. Turns into a monster that can blow wind around. But Nodokai is proud of her town now. All the people here are great, and I'm not going to let you one spoil the festival for him. He's having a good time, man. Why do you want to destroy us? So we're going to beat the crap out of you. I described how they do the team up attack. They get a new, like, little jewel you need to put onto the wand or the rod or like that. Then they kind of, like, you know, get into a circle and they sort of kind of, like, keep tapping away at the thing, like a tambourine. Just going, like, tap it, tap it, tap it. We're going to charge up our good vibes and good energy and shoot out a beam at you and blow you up. Well, not blow you up. It's kind of this shoot sphere. It's kind of like a special beam cannon, where this laser just shoots straight through you, but the laser turns into these like very careful crushing hands that kind of gently guide out the spirit that's been turned into a monster. It's like, all right, everyone had a good time. Festival is saved. Everyone gets some steam buns. It's fantastic. And the spirit they saved is so thankful. It's kind of like, it's getting nostalgic almost because it reminds them of a long time ago when there was a pre-cure before all of these. And she was able to heal people's wounds and worries and woes and sicknesses by creating beautiful music. And wouldn't you know it, she used to be the partner to Tia-teen, who was the Afghan hound, who was the queen of the healing garden and the mother of Latte, the little puppy dog. So there was like some kind of distant heritage of precures that goes back many, many years in this very, very town, which may have something to do with the girl's future and their possible future fates. Who knows? But just something's going to get dig up and there's there's going to be a fourth member added in. I wonder if there's going to be some like descendant of said first pretty cure, what happened with him. There's some kind of checkered past in there. Who knows? But it's nice. It's a good vibe. I like seeing a small town come together to help defeat a giant monster. It's heartwarming stuff. But the return of Sunday next week when we have our first fight, Nodoka and Rabirin go their separate ways. Also, I forgot as well that Nodoka is so healthy now that she is entered in, or better, press gang into service by the little animals, because there is a competition which we can win like 100 of these lovely sweet steam buns. The competition is a loud voice competition, and Nodoka is so healthy now that she has mighty lungs that can shout out, "I love being alive!" and win him 100 buns to share with all their mates. Good stuff. Made me hungry.
Yeah. For a moment there, I thought there was a magical girl show about Koipu, but I was wrong. It's about a capybara. and I guess it's not technically a magical girl show, but it sort of is. Happy Cappy.
There's that one mention in Pop Team Epic Count, which are pretty magical.
I guess they are. And I had to double check. I don't think there is any in Cute High Earth Defense Club either. That's a wombat, the main one is. And, unless one shows up in the later series, it's a hedgehog and a goldfish. But yeah, Happy Cappy.
They have to like check off a list as to what animals there are available for these.
Now, Happy Cappy is essentially a magical girl show, but it's about a alien capybara who turns into a superhero. It's like, what if the mascot was the magical girl?
That sounds like a significant improvement, no offense, but yeah.
No offense to all those magical girls out there listening.
Yeah, no.
Daydream Princess Tutu. That was a swan and wanted to be a regular girl.
That's true.
Oh.
Then we've got One Piece episode. Hang on, let me get my glasses out. 931.
Let me just count up to it.
Climb up Luffy's desperate escape. Dun dun dun. In which we leave Luffy. Well, we return to Luffy where we left him at the end of last week's episode, escaping, climbing up a big wall. And then he falls down the wall. As people throw rocks.
A bunch of lads are throwing things at him.
Throwing rocks, swords. That's not how you use those lads, but good try there.
And then I can't remember the order all that. Basically, there's mainly two main scenes.
Yeah, it keeps
scenes,
cutting back
there?
And forth. So.
Yeah, so there's the scene in the prison, which is essentially Queen, there'll be what do they call it? It's like a death match sumo thing.
It's Sumo Inferno, I think it is.
That's it, yes. So we're going to take your cuffs off, we're going to put these cuffs around your neck. And if you get pushed out of the sumo ring, then these blades will come out, like the deadly flying guillotine, and your head will come off. Luffy retains this information for about 30 seconds.
Because they put the collar on him, and he's like, hey, this is going to chop off your head and leave the thing. And it's like, but both you guys have to wrestle as many guys as we fucking feel like. But to make it fair, I'm going to take off your She-Stone cuffs. He's like, wow, you're going to let me go? That's so cool of you. Like, no, I put the other collar on you that's worse than the sea stone cuffs. What the fuck?
Yeah, Queen is quite... you have some sympathy for Queen with Luffy's stupidity here. Here Goro's...
I did like also Raizo kind of looking on going like, what the fuck? I got this key for nothing. Wait, yeah.
We can let somebody else have it now.
Yeah,
I can't remember if the other scenes have happened already. I'm forgetting the order in which things I was, because there is one other scene, which is the gang with Yasu, and I was like, okay, that other scene I thought had already happened hasn't happened yet. This is going to happen. Higuri wants them to execute him separately because he's just going to be drag on Luffy having to fight people in this arena. Meanwhile, at the bathhouse, the girls are letting it all hang out. Apparently Shinobu's thing was not haki, it was her devil fruit power. The thing she used for rotting the wood.
Yeah, yeah, because she does, like, Robin's more like, hey, this is mixed bathing and I'm not comfortable with this. And she takes it as, like, yes, she didn't say devil fruit users. What do they call them? Jutsu users, yeah. we don't like submerging ourselves in water. And it's like, no, she's uncomfortable because there's a bunch of dudes leering at her.
Whereas Navi's like, I should be charging these guys to leer at me. Why are they getting to leer at me for free?
Never turn down a good business opportunity.
But Shinobu takes care of the leering with her... What's her move called?
Ball crusher.
That's it. I thought it had a prefix before the ball crusher, but yeah, I think it's just the ball crusher.
It might be like Jutsu ball crusher or something like that. Yeah. Cause they're all special moves.
Yes. Which just appears to
wrecks
be
all those guys. Yeah.
Grabbing people's balls and crushing them.
It fucking works. It's a kind of magic.
And
so
again,
they go into like the cold bath to get washed down, and it's that fucking octopus again. Is he like the key to this whole fucking arc or what? I don't know.
Could well be. I wonder if he'll show up at the end.
I just turns up, yeah. Yes.
Everyone's just like, oh, it's that fucking octopus. Never mind him. It's perfectly fine.
He's meant to be knocking himself on the head. Wiggling around, soaping people up. It's helping.
And again, this is the problem now. I'm trying to remember which scenes were in the episode and which scenes will be in the future episodes.
It's the scene with, Sanji. Sanji's not there. He's off the lured women. Usopp and Law and,
Yasu.
Yasu is letting them stay in a house because they're all just fucking dying anyway. We got loads of empty houses. all the guys are like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Context, yeah.
Zoro's wandered off.
Yeah, someone robbed his sword, and they're like, yeah, he's lost now. We'll never see him again for another 10 years.
I think that was everything. They don't start the battle. There was other stuff earlier on with the elephant chested guy.
Yeah, your men try to shoot him off the wall.
Shooting cannonballs out of his trunk.
Oh, yeah. There's also, while Luffy's falling off a wall, our ninja boy, Raizo, meets up with an old friend of his that's in prison.
Kawamatsu.
Prison in the prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been surviving. Yeah, they've been feeding him poison fish. Yeah. Mm. Which he has been able to devour without any problems. That was established in earlier episodes. But yes, he's chained up, so you need to get him free somehow as well.
They're keeping him in the dark and what he looks like in the dark, but they did let him laugh, which gives it entirely away.
Yeah. It's always the way. It's like, you know, yeah. He was this like very, like, looming, ominous character in the shadows. You know, he just like, I'm going to hide this for chapter after chapter. And when you see him, he's going to look dumb as shit. But you won't mind, because he's going to be also going to be a completely hench badass.
Yeah,
Yeah, I just remember how this bit ends, and it is with a bunch of hench badasses. Generally,
it is like, you know, again, the, like, complete, like, natural evolution of that Fist of the North Star rule, you know, which is, like, really, like, evoking here. The dumber you look in Fist of the North Star, the more dangerous you are, because that means no one's going to, like, say anything about how you look.
That's probably why everyone, like, dresses in, like, tires and mohawks and stuff. You're trying to look dumb, so you look tough. Mm.
And next week it is Hawkins, Sober Mask, and Drake at the bathhouse, and Zorro confronting the sword thief, and Luffy in the sumo battle.
Mm.
I believe those lads at the bathhouse gives us a little bit more insight into their personalities as well. As not everyone from North Blue is as lascivious as Sanji, it turns out. But that's for next week. Another good looking episode. I suspect that'll be the case for at least a few weeks.
Mm.
As
Everything
gets ahead of schedule.
I think they had something sort of start back on Inter, so maybe that the kind of momentum was getting back to us as maybe end up stuff. But I Precure looked pretty decent now as well. When it comes down to fighting monsters and shit, also in the funnier bits too. I'll enjoy it while it lasts there as well.
And they have Queen do his dance again because they know a good thing when they see it.
Well, that's why he wrote that into the comic.
Yeah.
He has to do it now.
And we know that he'll have an even bigger set piece later on in the story.
God, there is so much to look forward to. I mean, like, I know I'm keeping as you are with the comic, but there is like, oh, I can't wait to see that adapted. Ooh, I'd love to see that expanded on, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I have like a new panel I can't wait to see animators come out on the latest chapter, and I think you'll know precisely what one I mean. But I won't say that now for people who are watching this week to week.
Sure.
Rightio, that is everything. Next week, more things. Maybe things will have to stop being watched. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, currently, Woodpecker Detective's Office though has ended, of course.
Yeah.
So that leaves a slot open, and there's those other slots of things which haven't come back yet. I think the worrying time is when those things come back. So it will probably be the additions for me will probably be Decadence and God of High School.
Yeah. I mean, like that's one we're probably going to stick with for a bit just to get a feel for it.
Decadence probably pretty good though, because it's going to be like Mob Psycho, but it's not Mob Psycho. It's actually like free of that, but I want to have that same manic energy. But it won't be a one story about people with power and how they deal with it, people with power don't necessarily, like, no, they can be good people or they can be afraid of power. No, kind of do. It's like something like, oh, we're going to get the director of that, and it's the screenwriter
as well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. See what they can do when they have that kind of material and talent to work with. Got a High School also was, can kind of fight it beside, B and A as being, this is super dumb, but it's super fun to watch, so I don't really mind.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. I don't think I'm in a rush to catch up on Fire Force in a week.
No. I think there's going to be plenty fucking happening, yeah.
Yeah, and that GB8's not for another week. And I'm not sure how good that's actually going to look based on the trailers that I see.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we could take a one episode dip at least. Yeah, see how it goes.
One thing I slept on there, and it ended its second bit of it there just recently, and man, I'm sorry, I left it alone for so long, and being wrecked just by people that we know as well, that it'd be good. Everyone said, yeah, watch it, but fucking, the Kaguya-sama Lover's War, that is up my fucking alley, and I think you would really enjoy it as well, Dwayne.
Okay.
If you enjoyed, like Mr. Tony Gow or how we're making these like completely high stakes things out of the most banal shit, then this is it. It's just stupid shit like, you know, like trying to ask on the sly for your line address or to trick you into asking me to ask you for it kind of a way, because we can't give in. The person who reveals their feelings first is the loser. They're going to be like the inferior in this relationship, so I can't budge an inch, otherwise I'm going to set myself up as the fall guy in our burgeoning romance. But okay, the lengths they go to, the fucking plans upon plans, because she, Kaguya, is like the scion of this banking conglomerate, got like infinite money, and she just like, you know, this very innocent little meat cute, but she's actually for weeks I've laid plans upon plans.
She's got a board with lines of in here. Yeah. I got you.
It's just completely crazy. And just like, it's just the music and the narration. It's the same voice actor as, the granddad in Rumacon as well. If you want to hear him talk an accent more.
Okay.
I kind of feel like, oh, I'm sorry I missed out on that, because that would have been a great week to week, watch for this. Because it is broken down into small little sketches as well. so there's a late one for you if you haven't, gotten near that one yet.
There is one other thing next week, in fact, tomorrow.
Oh?
Japan Sinks 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
We're going to be sinking in anime. Buried under it.
Oh, well. There's worse ways to go. Righty-ho. Anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness that you want to let people know about?
Recording critic with Libby at the end of the week, and I've been putting some ideas together because I think I was quite, in a sense, overthinking. I just wanted to do a format that we quite enjoyed doing and putting together, which was Drawn or Alive. We're comparing a cartoon against its live action counterpart or adaptation or vice versa thereof. You know, one came for the other or one or whatever happens out there. But we had some good fun with that with you, Brian, talking about Top Cast and the Silver Show. And just things I've been kind of putting together and think these should actually be really kind of fun to do. Because one I had thought of, and again, it's probably up your alley, would be The Tick versus The Tick versus The Tick.
Yeah, that would be very much up my alley. In fact, that may be the alleyway I live in.
in a bin, like Oscar the Grouch.
Yes.
So that's among many other possible ones for that now, because, yeah. Just think it doesn't need to be necessarily tied into, we'll say, the quote-unquote main recording we would do of a month. This, if it sounds like something fun to compare and contrast things, and just fucking run with it.
Yeah.
So maybe I could try to schedule a few of those in other weeks and get those out to you.
Mm-hmm. So ideas. Our recording of Dynamite in the Brain will be Anthony's last for a while this weekend. So I will probably stick it on the Twitch because he wants to take a break because he's being overwhelmed by stuff. He may talk about it on the podcast. He may not. But that might actually come out as a podcast for another month and a bit, because I've got so many in the backlog. So that'll be the fifth episode to come out. So he may have changed his mind by then. But otherwise, I've still got plans for other podcasts already fermenting as we speak. So don't expect Dynamite in the Brain to necessarily go away, but I may change its name, because maybe Dynamite in the Brain is me and Anthony, and maybe I have to give it a different name when it's Anthony's not there. I may consider that. But also, it will also free time up to do something Lewis suggested I do many moons ago, but this was many moons ago when I had to drive to work an hour each way. I no longer have to do that, which will probably be to make some sort of online version of some of my panels. As there are no cons coming up, except one, which I really hope is not coming up, but I have worries that it is coming up, but we'll see. Yeah. Ooh. But let's assume that there are no cons coming up for us until April. And so I may stick out some old con content repurposed for the online age. And there won't be live stuff. I'm not planning on doing any sort of online con presentations. They'll probably be pre-recorded.
So not streaming, just there to be watched. Okay.
Yeah, and if they don't seem to cause copyright strikes, they'll go on YouTube. And if they might cause copyright strikes, I may have to figure out some other way to get them to you.
It depends on what they use. I was hearing some feedback about that any lockdown con that was kind of a proof of concept, if you want to call it, for this kind of thing, was on back in April. And it had multiple streams out running on different things, so you could take a view it on. And I think the YouTube one got struck down by the first panel that had a copyright clip in it. But the Twitch one kept on going, but it just didn't stay in the watch later archive bit. Didn't like leave it up there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, whereas so I'm planning on making them for posterity, so it may have to go onto some sort of New Zealand based file sharing service.
Only the worthy may view the sacred video.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what I do. At the very least, it may be practice for what may be required for conventions next year.
I'll wait and see what I hear back from. I did put an application for one that is going to be online within the next couple of weeks, I think. Yeah, that's a couple of weeks now. I haven't heard back to the positive or negative about it yet, but they had a couple of things I wanted to ask them about, but I said I wouldn't ask until confirmed
or anything.
Yeah, yeah. But it's kind of getting, the more time I have, the better.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things I may need to tweak and re-engineer for, even panels I already have, because I may need to move things around in the slides so that they fit the graphics that they plan to probably overlay on the video stream. So I might need a bit of time to do that. So the sooner to get back, the better, lads, please.
Yeah, the reason it came to mind was because I was testing some streaming equipment and software. I was doing it by reading out an old panel script, and I was like, oh, yeah, I can do this. And also, as I read it out now, I realize weaknesses in the script that I would have covered up by energy from being in a room full of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read them straight off the script, you suddenly go, oh, yeah, no, I should do this more before I do panels rather than rely on the live energy. But,
No, I think it's fine to live rather than write something for recording.
It's a different thing, yes. But, and that's kind of why I don't necessarily want to do a, online con panel live, because I won't have the room energy.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll feed off.
If you're fine with pre-recording it, even down to your own, voiceover or whatever for it, that is a way to go. If there was an option that was in mind for the one I applied for. And they said that they'd have somebody come out and introduce it at the beginning, but then they just like roll VT and then they come in and come at the end to, you know, close it off or have a Q&A if you want to do that. I don't know what the person there can't really answer the questions, I would say, but if that's something you want to do, sure.
This is more for posterity in some of these cases. But partly because it's like, the video I've got on YouTube, which has got the most views, isn't on my channel. It's on somebody else's for when they recorded my panel.
Dear.
I mean, swings and roundabouts, they've stopped recording panels, possibly also because of one of my panels. King of the copyright strike. What I did was put a clip of Tiger Mask Double in the panel, I think that was the issue.
Okay.
Toei, don't put Toei stuff onto YouTube. You'll be in trouble, even if it's like recorded in a room with the room sound. I think they'll still pick up on it. But such is life. Otherwise, this podcast will still be here next week. But let's find out from Niall when that day of the week it is that we will be on. And then me and Dwayne will actually try and remember which day it is this week.
Well, I decree that it shall fall upon Wednesday the 15th of July upon the hour of 7:30 p.m. Because then I will be awake at a night shift and will have eaten something and will be in fine form for talking about cartoons for another hour and a half to 2 hours.
Splendid. Now, very well, we shall see you all then. Thanks for listening. And if you're listening in the future, thanks for listening in the future. And if you're listening to the podcast, thanks for listening to the podcast. Just generally, thanks for listening. Eventually, I may convince these guys to get their faces on the YouTube channel as soon as I figure out how to do the technology.
This fucking mug? Come on.
You gotta start shaving again?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to shave.
Yeah, I did a bit of shaving today. Okay, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.